All right, welcome to Building the Athlete. I'm your host, Scott Benson, Hall of Fame athlete, Hall of Fame coach, and sports performance expert. Today on the show, I'm excited. We've got Tony Holler, a Hall of Fame coach and founder of the Feed the Cats program. Tony, welcome to the show. Please introduce yourself and tell us how you're doing today.
Well, thank you. This is going to be fun. I always introduce myself as I was born a coach's kid. My dad coached 47 years. 44 is a head basketball coach at the high school and college level. And two of my sons are coaches. And it's just kind of what I do, who I am. And I love to talk about it.
That's awesome. For people that are listening, where can they find you if they want to learn more about the products that you have to offer?
Well, I'm actually probably overexposed at this point. You know, I do my own Twitter, but I have my son that is not a coach is my content manager on YouTube and Instagram and TikTok. And he has me on Facebook now, I think. It's crazy. But all my most recent courses are on CoachTube. And I was just told last week that I'm the number one seller all sports on CoachTube, over 18,000 bookings. It's just been a crazy last 10 years for me, where my message has kind of gotten traction and has become a popular thing, not just across the United States, but, you know, I've spoken 6 times in Europe. So it's been quite a ride.
That's awesome. So let's talk a little bit about that. I mean, obviously we're a long time track coach. What point did the entrepreneur in you come out, and how did that evolve into what you're doing now?
Well, like so many things in life, you can't choose your time. I was a good coach long before anybody knew what I was doing. But I think that something happened around 2012 where, this sounds strange, but I got on Twitter, and I thought what was Twitter? And I think my son told me, yeah, it's just where people say what they're doing, and it's kind of a silly thing and blah, blah, blah. But when I got on Twitter, all of a sudden we started talking back and forth to other coaches. And, you know, you could, back then at least, before the crazy algorithms now, when you picked the people you wanted to follow, that's what came up on your feed. You weren't fed any like Nazi porn stuff or anything. You know what I mean?
Right.
But anyway, in the early days, you could keep it very, very focused on what you wanted to do. And because of some of my radical views or counterintuitive methods of training, I was asked by a guy that ran the Illinois Track Coaches website if I would be willing to write a blog or two. And about 50 blogs later, you know, people had read them. And all of a sudden, you know, people wanted more. And as luck would have it, a phenom lived in my neighborhood named Marcellus Moore, who set the world record for 14-year-olds when he was a freshman for me, and the Illinois state record as a sophomore. And at the age of 23 now, he's run 9.93 in the 100, eighth best in the country. So having a phenom like that kind of put my ideas on rocket boosters. You know, my ideas were good without Marcellus, but when people saw Marcellus, they're like, oh, who's his coach? And so that led to content creation and podcasts. And before you know it, it's kind of like Feed the Cats is something that people know.
Right. Right. When you say, you know, you were out on Twitter a lot and people were reading, was it mostly coaches?
Yeah, it was. It was absolutely coaches. And I think I benefit from having a multi-sport background as well. I mentioned that my dad was a famous basketball coach. Two of my mom's brothers were Hall of Fame football coaches. And I coached football for 25 years. I was a head basketball coach for 9. My sons were multi-sport athletes and all that kind of stuff. So I think I was talking, I make fun of track coaches often because they're kind of analytical, distance geek type of dudes, carry a clipboard. And, you know, they're very organized and all that stuff. And I'm kind of the opposite. I'm kind of an emotional. One time a guy told me that I coached track like a basketball coach. And I thought, gee, what does that mean? And, you know, do I, you know, get technical fouls and stomp my foot and yell? And it probably does. You know, I was an emotional track coach. And I think that helped. And so a lot of my track and field ideas now are blooming in football and in lacrosse and in basketball and rugby and those kinds of things, because really I don't sell a recipe. I sell a way to cook that's very different from the traditional way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you and I coached a lot of the same, and we'll talk about that here. But I, you know, everywhere I go, I talk to high school track coaches, and it's feed the cats, feed the cats. I hear it all the time. And I mean, honestly, maybe 4, 5, 6 years ago is kind of when I first started hearing it, but it's everywhere now. And, you know, one thing I see in sports a lot, and in all sports, not just track and field, but so many coaches, you know, they're a victim of their past. They do what they did, or they just do what the program has always done, because that's the way the program's always done it. And I think you've been an innovator, especially, you know, talking about speed development. And, you know, a lot of times innovation is just simplifying something. See that that's what you've done. You know, and you've probably had these conversations as well with parents when dad comes up to you and says, you know, my son needs to be running some repeat 500s to get better at the 400. Or, you know, I'll have baseball dads come in and say, you know, you need to get my kid's arm stronger because he's going to pitch this year. And I'll say, that's awesome. How about we work on his legs, or you know, whatever it may be. You know, somebody coming in with an 8-year-old, I need to get him in your speed development program. And I'll say, well, maybe we need to get their core stronger so we can actually get them into positions and hit the right angles, because a lot of kids just aren't strong enough to do that. So, you know, thinking differently and backing it up and having those conversations with parents is how you make change. But what was it that, you know, in your coaching career, what made you feel that there needed to be change, or you saw an opportunity to change traditional thinking?
I think it's, first of all, really important what you said, that we inherit many of our beliefs. I tell people that you think you have free will. About 90% of the people are the religion of their parents, the politics of their parents. They coach the way they were coached. And it's something called anchor bias, where genetically it was a survival trait for us to latch on to what successful elders did. And so people who latched on live long enough to have kids and pass on that DNA. So I think, you know, that first of all, you're not strange from doing it the way it's always been done. It's a part of who we are. But what I had been a basketball coach, and basketball coaches feel like the whole world is watching them. And sometimes it is, you know, like you are maybe the most recognizable person in a small town if you're a head mm-hmm. basketball coach. Whereas when I got fired in 1990 as a basketball coach, and the same board that fired me hired me as the head track coach 1 month earlier because nobody would take the job, I had to reinvent myself in a sport that is a stepchild. The track and field is not a ball sport. It's not a revenue sport. Track and field, I say that sometimes parents don't even go to meets. I say I coach orphans in track and field. So track and field, to me, gave me an opportunity to experiment. And I have a science background. The thing that really, I'd had good success. We'd won a state championship. But 4 years later, my son, who could dunk a basketball as an eighth grader, great athlete. He's going to be one of my great ones. And he lives in my house. He said, Dad, I'm going to play baseball in high school because track sucks. I said, it does suck. But, and I just paused. And I thought, I've always hated track. I hated track. I ran college track and hated every minute of it. I mean, you know, I was just good enough that I kept doing it. You know, the meets gave me a little bit of satisfaction. And as you know, hard work kind of is satisfying. You go out and run 12 200s. It's a stupid thing to do, but gosh, you feel like you did something hard, you know? So when he said that, I thought to myself, I need to change. I would rather have a lesser track team, but attract athletes like my son to my program. Oh, and by the way, if I have the best athletes of any other track coach, we're still going to be pretty good. Now, the way I did that, I started training everybody like they're at the NFL combine. Sprint, lift, jump, bounce, throw in small doses, anaerobic. My guys have not run a lap, except for in meets, in 26 years. Our hardest workout for our 400 guys is 3x200, spiked up with a 4-minute rest. That's our hardest workout. And we're still good at the 400. What shocked me was that speed was much more trainable than I thought. That if you prioritize sprinting in small doses, anything more than 5 seconds is working on something other than speed. So 90-some% of our work is done at 5 seconds of intensity and then recover. And recover enough to do 5 more seconds of performance level intensity. And what I found was we got fast. I also found that the cats of our school, the best athletes, wanted to be on my track team. I also found that even though they made me a good track coach, it was the generic kids that improved the most. The craziest thing is I thought I was forfeiting the 4x4 forever, that the 400 meters took a lot of hard work. What I found was that really fast guys who love track ran really fast in the 400, which was, to this day, it's mind-blowing to me that you can be so undertrained and still be so good in the 400 because you're fast and you love the sport.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just sitting here smiling because I just love everything that you're saying. I'm going to tell you a story. When I was coaching, this is probably 10 years ago, and we had one of those springs where March and April were gone. Weather took us out, just couldn't get outside. And the school that I coached at, we had a dirt track. And so we had rocks all over. So I didn't even want to take athletes there. So we had a hill out back. So we did hill training in the back. And then if we went diagonal across the gym, I could get a 30, 20, and a 10 in. And what I told my team was, hey, those months are gone. We can't do anything about that. I said, but here's what we're going to do. I said, in May, when we get outside, we're going to focus on speed. We're going to get really fast. We're going to take a lot of volume out. We missed our window on that. And let me tell you what's going to happen is every coach out there is going to hammer their kids into the ground as soon as they get out on the track. We're going to get to the state meet. I might not be able to put you all in four events because we might not have that type of conditioning, but we will be the fastest team and everybody else is going to fall apart. And sure enough, our biggest rival who had us outmatched that year had three or four of their top guys go down the first day of state track meet. Our guys performed out of their minds because they were rested and they were ready to run fast. That to me, I think, is a lot of the same philosophy that we share. It's not about, and this is well beyond track and field, and I'd like to talk about it, but coaches hammer their kids into the ground for absolutely no reason. Like I see basketball coaches, it's the week of the state tournament, they're putting their kids through boot camps. It's like you're training them for the off season because it's not even going to have an effect on them before you play in 5 or 6 days. So I see this in so many different sports. I enjoy what you're saying. Tell me, and you've answered it a little bit already, but...
Founded in 2004, BBS Radio TV stands as a trailblazer in remotely engineered live radio broadcasts over the internet. We ignited the new media revolution, offering a powerful platform for vital voices and alternative perspectives that mainstream media often silences. Our live broadcasts stream on over 200 of the world's largest internet broadcast stations, with on-demand syndication across all major social networks. Visionary entrepreneurs Douglas and Donald Newsom have crafted over 100,000 radio and web TV episodes for more than 1,000 satisfied clients. Experience the pinnacle of web radio and TV engineering. Compare our unbeatable prices, exceptional services, and comprehensive offerings with any other professional provider, and you'll see why we're unparalleled in the industry. Call us at 1-800-338-4393. At Benson Sports Training, we build athletes of every age, every level, and every goal. Whether you're chasing your first medal, a college scholarship, or just a healthier you. Our expert online coaching programs will help you perform at your best. Train smarter, move better, achieve more. Enter 15OFF in the discount code at checkout for 15% off your first month. Visit BensonSportsTraining.com for more information. Where champions are built every day. BensonSportsTraining.com.
BBS Radio TV. If it's not mainstream, it's on BBS Radio TV. A place for answers.
What is your definition of speed training, not just in track and field, but in all sports?
Well, speed training, I say that if you wanted to define, you know, how you train a cat. sprint as fast as possible, as often as possible, as fresh as possible. Those three things. I mean, that's like, that should be like a sign or something up on every athletic locker. And so if you break that down, when you say as fast as possible, that means you must do as many things optimally as possible. Like if you can wear spikes and get on a track, do it because you're a little faster. If you can run with the wind instead of against the wind, run with the wind. If you're faster at noon than you are at 5 in the morning, you go at noon. So fast as possible, the biggest thing, you have to be being timed. If you are not being timed, you probably are just running. You will not come close to running as fast as you can. So time sprints, the key number one thing you can do as a speed coach. You can be a speed coach without knowing any of the hundreds of coaching points that I know about sprint mechanics. And if you just take your kids out, you know, I have a 9-year-old and a 7-year-old grandson, and they've been being timed in sprints since they were 2. And it's a game. It's kind of like measuring how tall a kid is on the doorstop or whatever, you know, the door frame. Well, my grandkids have been measuring their speed all the way through. And that alone, we tend to self-organize when we sprint, which means as we get faster, our brain learns how we did that. So sprinting fast and getting time is really important. As often as possible, I think it's about 2.4 times a week, which means that twice a week is probably my best answer. 3 times a week is max. And then as fresh as possible, that's why we don't sprint 2 days in a row. That's why we say things like never burn the steak. We say things, never let today ruin tomorrow. That fatigue is the enemy, not the goal. And as you said, basically coaches in the past intentionally created miserable, hard workouts. It was the hell you had to go through to get to heaven. It was the Norman Dale and Hoosiers had a quote that somebody put on Twitter about 8 years ago, and it got like 2 million likes. It said, "My practices are not meant for your enjoyment." And everybody's like, "Yeah, you tell those damn kids." And I'm like, kids are better at what they like. And kids are willing to bust their butt, and they're willing to do hard things if they love what they're doing. And I think that's a real key thing. A lot of people think, oh, feed the cats, that's soft. Nope. Oh, feed the cats athletes will fight you because they love what they're doing.
Yeah, I like that. And I like the fact that you say 2.5 times a week. You know, I tell kids, you've got your, you know, your aerobic conditioning, that hangs on for a long time. Your strength hangs on. Speed will fade after 72 hours, just simply from a neurological standpoint of recruitment of you know, large motor units. And, you know, I preach that and preach that and preach that, but I feel like, you know, I don't, my athletes listen, but coaches outside of that, that's just a foreign concept. And if you were just to take a wild guess, and I don't know the answer to this, I just want to get your opinion on it. What percentage of, let's just say, you know, if we're talking football, basketball, soccer, baseball, track and field, how many of those athletes, high school athletes in the United States, do you think are training for speed?
I think even in the best sport for speed, track and field sprinters that run the 100 and the 200, I think the majority of track coaches still train those guys with volumes, even in track. Now, sprint-based football is becoming a real thing. It's feed the cats football. And so I would say traditional football is still 80-20 or 90-10. Sprint-based football, you stop doing mindless conditioning at the end of practice. Your practices are 1.5 hours instead of 2.5. The health of your players is synonymous with their speed. So you speed train twice a week. And if you're slow as a team, you look yourself in the mirror as a coach and say, why are they slow? And it's always because of your volumes. Sprint-based football teams have about a 98 to 99% health rate where all their athletes are available because speed is prioritized, health is prioritized, and rest, recovery, sleep, my shirt says rest, recovery, sleep, is prioritized. When that happens, teams win. And if you think about it as a coach, if you are, I tell coaches they are reflectors. You cannot be a happy coach with a miserable team. it's impossible. If your kids are bouncing into practice and practice is the best part of their day, you will be a happier, better coach. And if you're practicing an hour and a half instead of 2.5, that happiness goes home with you, which, believe it or not, there are coaches who are staying in the game now because they are changing the way they think. And the most important thing is none of these things could be talked about if it did not win. It absolutely wins games.
Yeah. So my theory when I was coaching is, and I didn't coach for a long time. I coached for 8 years, won a lot of state titles. Never once did I set a goal of winning a state title, of winning a conference championship. My goals were absolutely always process, you know, oriented. So, and one of my goals was, look, you come here, you give me 50 minutes of business-like attention, and we go hard while we're here, we do everything right, and I'm going to get you out of here so you can go be a kid, you can go get your homework done, you can go do something with your family. And I found way more success with, you know, where I see these coaches, you know, and I see it with my own kids and their sports and, you know, 3-hour practices, and, you know, mentally they're gone. After an hour, they're gone. But what do you, as far as, you know, and this is kind of a tangent here, but as far as goal setting, I mean, do you agree or disagree? I see so much emphasis put on, we got to win this, we got to win that. And that's a result. It's not a goal. It's not an action. Could you speak on that?
Yeah. And I'm kind of counterintuitive with everything I say. I love to look at things that are traditional and say, could there be a better way? And so I would say, what comes to mind when you think of sports? Well, goals do, you know, championships and records and things like that. And so I got this from a book called Chop Wood, Carry Water by Josh Metcalf. Great book, a thin book. You can read it in a couple of days. And it's just full of great stories. He says to burn your goals. You know, that's a great hook right away. Burn your goals. It just kind of like what you were saying, you know, like, if your goal is to win the conference, what happens after you win the conference? Is your goal now to win the state championship? You know, goals are weird. There's all these stops and starts and wins and losses and all that stuff. So what he says is instead go on a mission, which really, you use the word process. I actually make fun of the word process because so many coaches have a bad process.
Right.
I tell people that so many coaches throw 12 eggs against the wall, pick up the one that didn't break, and say, trust the process. Well, that's a bad process, and you should not trust it. So I love to, instead of saying, trust the process, say, go on a mission. The mission never changes. You want to be the best you can be, and you wake up with the same darn mission every single day. And then the third thing is the hardest thing in the world for me and for all coaches, and that is surrender to the results. The reason why that is so important is not just for your mental health, but because if you are, I tell the story that the 300, the Spartans that went to fight the 100,000 Persians at Thermopylae, those 300 guys knew that they would all die. Matter of fact, they were picked because they had the strongest wives, because they knew that all of their children would be orphans raised by their wives. So when they went to Thermopylae to battle the Persians, they fought like nobody else because they were not worried. They didn't think about winning and losing. They had surrendered to the result. Now, if all three of them survived, you can handle that. That's no big deal. But they fought like they didn't care. And I think that's a kind of a cool way to be as an athlete. I wish I could be. I've always been the type of guy that, like, as an athlete, I thought too much and tried too hard. And that's carried on to coaching. So I have to self-coach myself a lot to surrender to the result that if we go perform and take care of business, it doesn't matter if we're second or third. And we will move beyond that. And the mission never changes.
Yeah, that's good stuff. You might need to counsel me on that. I'm same way where I'm, you know, was always ultra hard on myself. Mm-hmm. You know, as a coach and an athlete, it's kind of funny. I have my youngest daughter who's a junior this year, and she's a volleyball player and a high jumper. There's no thought process behind it. She just goes out there and she's dancing and laughing and she performs. And it drives me nuts because I couldn't be like that. I had to be serious and focused. And before, you know, I would compete in a major championship, I would isolate for days and visualization and all that stuff. And then I see my daughter, she's out there watching TikTok videos 5 minutes before she jumps, and that works for her. So yeah, I totally agree with you.
You remember when Usain Bolt used to clown around before like the championship of the 100 meters in the Olympics? And people say, boy, if he would just get serious. No, he was in a performance state. You know, high adrenaline, fight or flight. The third F is freeze. And people like me and you who tried really hard and thought too much, we actually dampened our performance levels because we were not in the flow, in the zone. And I always tell my athletes at the, you know, like track meets, you may have 12 people in the stands. And then you go to the state meet, you have 25,000. You don't have to get psyched up to run at the state meet. It will just happen. So really, it's the opposite. You have to have tools that keep you relaxed and kind of unfocused when otherwise you're going to just burn out and you're going to freeze up.
Yeah, I was going to just ask you about that. You use the word freeze, and you know, you see the sprinters who, you know, 10, 15 minutes before the race, they're screaming and jumping and slapping themselves. And, you know, that parasympathetic nervous system can only stay up for so long. And, you know, you're standing there waiting to race, and by the time they're coming out of the blocks, they're crashing. And I mean, I see that a lot. I'm sure you have as well. So, I mean, the mental approach is certainly very, very important. So, you know, talking about speed training, and I mean, we agree that it's just not, it's just, you don't see it in the United States very often from a team perspective. You know, we've talked a little bit about, you know, we do what we do because we've always done it that way. Is that why? Do you think that's the biggest reason why there's a lack of speed training? Or is it just not having the knowledge or not trusting the results? You know, why are we missing out on such a huge aspect of training and performance?
That answer is fun for me. I think there's several things. One is the military model. When World War II guys came back from World War II, millions of young men in their early 20s, late teens, they understood that the bonding that happened in war, especially with men, when men go through hard things together, they develop friendships that they will never get in civilian life. It is, talk to anybody who's ever gone through really hard things with a group of men. And I think what they wanted for their own sons is they wanted that experience without getting shot at. And so no matter what the sport was, you could pick baseball. I mean, like, you could almost play baseball after a couple of beers, but yet baseball teams were worked hard. You know, there's baseball teams now that you have to run a mile in a certain time to make the baseball team. I guess Babe Ruth wouldn't have made your team. You know, it's silly stuff. But I think that hard stuff is important. I think that hard sells. Like when I'm watching a football game, the things that they talk about with individual players is not their rest, recovery, sleep, not their discipline in eating, not their consistent speed training, which is 5 seconds or less. They want to show people dragging heavy sleds up a sand dune while they're wearing army boots in the 108 degree heat. You know, everybody wants to be the Mamba mentality. Every great athlete wants to tell you that the only reason they made it was they outworked everybody else. And I'm sorry, but Kobe Bryant, he had some advantages. I'm sure he learned to work hard, and he learned to love to work hard because he got so much feedback and money for doing it. But the Mamba mentality of getting up at 4 a.m. ruins your sleep. And there are so many kids who've been broken by trying to copy this. And then coaches copy great coaches. And, you know, probably the greatest coach that's ever lived was Clyde Hart. And Clyde Hart would, you know, famously run 15 200s on the first day of track practice with his sprinters. And so as a stupid high school coach, you go, well, Clyde Hart, he's the greatest. So I'm going to have, you know, my kids run 15 200s on the first day of track practice. And those 14-year-old girls, you know, break their shins. You know, they break. And you broke them. You should be charged with abuse. But instead, you said they're soft. You know, they aren't ready. They weren't as tough as we were as kids and all that kind of stuff. And so all this stuff gets perpetuated. And then we live in echo chambers where job security is like doing what everybody else does. There are sprint-based football coaches. This is a cool story. who say, "Coach, I'm totally bought in. We're going to do it. But if we go 6-3, I'm going to get fired." And I know why. I said, "Why, coach?" He goes, "Well, because the three losses are going to be because we didn't practice long enough, hard enough, didn't do enough conditioning." I said, "Well, what if you worked harder than anybody and went 3-6? He said, "I would not be fired." Wow. So really, really hard work is job security for a coach. And if you think about it, these guys that do less, I actually coached with a guy who gave his kids Thursdays off before a Friday game. Hall of Fame coach. This guy went 9-0, lost in the first round of the playoffs. And there was a special board meeting to try to fire him because he gave them Thursdays off and people said they saw him on a golf course on Thursdays. Hmm. Well, Thursdays off made his team play better, but he got blamed. That one loss was blamed on not working as hard as other teams.
Wow.
Founded in 2004, BBS Radio TV stands as a trailblazer in remotely engineered live radio broadcasts over the internet. We ignited the new media revolution, offering a powerful platform for vital voices and alternative perspectives that mainstream media often silences. Our live broadcasts stream on over 200 of the world's largest internet broadcast stations, with on-demand syndication across all major social networks. Visionary entrepreneurs Douglas and Donald Newsom have crafted over 100,000 radio and web TV episodes for more than 1,000 satisfied clients. Experience the pinnacle of web radio and TV engineering. Compare our unbeatable prices, exceptional services, and comprehensive offerings with any other professional provider, and you'll see why we're unparalleled in the industry. Call us at 1-800-338-4393. At Benson Sports Training, we build athletes of every age, every level, and every goal. Whether you're chasing your first medal, a college scholarship, or just a healthier you, our expert online coaching programs will help you perform at your best. Train smarter, move better, achieve more. Enter 15OFF in the discount code at checkout for 15% off your first month. Visit BensonSportsTraining.com for more information. Where champions are built every day. BensonSportsTraining.com.
BBS Radio TV. If it's not mainstream, it's on BBS Radio TV. A place for answers.
You know, it's so funny. You brought up copying, athletes copying, coaches copying. I'm going to jump a few questions ahead here. My question was, how often do you see coaches just copy speed coaching without understanding the technical side? So we already got to that, but I had the opportunity. One of my former teammates and training partners trained under Dan Paff for a lot of years when he first started at the University of Texas. So he connected me with Dan, and I was asking him, this is probably 10 years ago, maybe longer. You know, I was asking him about Usain Bolt and the toe drag coming out of the blocks and, you know, what his feelings were on that. And boy, he fired back at me and he's like, you know, it's BS. He said, we have all the data on it showing that Asafa Powell, Usain Bolt, they've all slowed down over the 10 when they started doing that. But now kids see them doing it and they're trying to emulate it. So I just agree with you so much on that so many things, especially with social media now, it's just a copy culture. They see something that gets a lot of clicks or a lot of likes, and so it must be good. And it's just so, so far from the truth. Yeah, I love what you're saying there with copying. So what, I did a couple weeks ago, I had a professional baseball player on, and we made some huge speed changes with him over COVID. He was a big, strong athlete, always fairly fast, but had no idea. He was powered it. He just powered himself, you know, to run fast. And we kind of refined him, and I got him working with my college sprinters. And in about a month, he was running away from my college sprinters. And, you know, I had some D1 guys. I was like, hey, you know, what are you doing? And they said, we can't keep up with him. But he went on to, you know, have a good college career. And then at the MLB Combine, he ran the second fastest 30-yard dash, and then he ended up being a fourth-round draft pick of the Yankees. But he said it. I mean, we hear that speed kills all the time. He said speed pays. He said, because I was able to improve, maybe it was 0.3 of a second, a 60-yard dash, but that paid me more in the draft than if I would have stayed where I was. You know, do you feel that that speed is probably the most important component of an athlete trying to move on to a college level?
Yes. Whenever I ask a coach, describe your best player, your best athlete, the first word comes out of their mouth is fast. Never slow, but you're like, no, speed is number one. One of my favorite topics is offensive tackles in football. If you're an offensive tackle with great tape, you know, you're a great player, you're all conference, you know, 6'5", 320, blah, blah, blah. And you go to the combine and run a 4.9, you're a first round draft pick. That same guy, if he goes and runs a 5.4, does not get drafted. I mean, in a position that does not require sprinting. The ability to sprint, we say, I'm a partner with Les Spellman, and my quote is, speed is the tide that lifts all boats. Les says, speed is global. And what that means is, if you are fast in a straight line, getting timed, you have a better first step as an offensive tackle, even if it's backwards. You have better balance. As a baseball player, yes, you know, your guy that ran faster at the combine, his stock went up because people want athletes. But this is kind of the forgotten thing, that speed training is the most extreme movement the human body can do. There's nothing more extreme. And when we improve at that extreme, we are able to send faster nerve impulses. We are able to contract and relax more frequently. We get healthier. We don't know why, but teams that sprint twice a week in football don't get injuries. I mean, it's like, it's mind-blowing, but they're healthier. Guys that run offensive tackles that run faster 40s have longer careers in the NFL because slow doesn't age well. And probably the best story, Brian Kula, good friend, he was Christian McCaffrey's track coach. He was his trainer throughout Christian's NFL years. He basically feed the cats training, 5 seconds, recover, 5 seconds, recover, exercises, sprints, lifts, but always in a performance state, always performance state. Well, two female golfers in Denver came to Brian and said, would you train us? And he said, yes. And so what they do, sprint, lift, jump, bounce, throw. And these girls were like, Coach Kula, in golf, we don't do any of those things. He goes, well, that's, and if you don't do those things, you're not a very good athlete. And so they, because they'd never sprinted before, 2 miles an hour faster in 10 weeks. Their club speed improved 15 miles an hour. That's what we mean by the speed is global. So your baseball player might have better bat speed,
sure,
because he got faster sprinting. He may have better cognitive recognition because his nervous system has improved. I say that speed's the fountain of youth. If I'm a runner instead of a sprinter just because of the time I grew up in. But if I could go back in time 50 years ago, I would never jog another mile, ever. I would sprint 5 seconds, take a break, 5 seconds. I'd do some exercises, lift some weights, have fun, and I'd be younger now than the 66-year-old I am now.
Well, again, you know, I'm smiling a lot here. You say the fountain of youth. I just read an article. They used to use grip strength as an indicator of longevity. Now they're talking about force production as an indicator of longevity. You know, using myself as an example, today's my 56th birthday, and I'm closer to 60 than 50, which is a little bit scary, but I train the same way I did when I was 25. I still do Olympic lifts. I still lift heavy. I still do plyometrics. I still sprint every week. And I've stayed religious to that over the years. I've never been injured. Even when I was an athlete a long time ago, I was always healthy. I've always trained this way. It's the basis of my business. Everything you've said. We lift heavy stuff. We sprint. We do lots of plyometrics. We do lots of hard ball slams. Anything explosive. And we do them together. So everything is in a relationship with the other. So we are maximizing that type 2 recruitment. And then we rest. And we let it take its course. And I've had so much success with that, but I just feel like that is such a minority, you know, way of training in our country. And if we know speed, and I love what you say about speed, and it's global, it's going to increase your exit velocity, it's going to increase your vertical jump, it's going to increase all of it. It's your ticket to the next level, but probably less than 10% are doing it. And I mean, you're out there preaching it, I'm out there preaching it, and we need to get more people out there preaching it. But if it's the ticket to the next level, why are we not doing it?
Well, having said that, I mean, I just started a Black or Cyber Monday sale on my CoachTube courses, and I looked, and I've sold 18,000 courses, 18,000, and I'm the number one seller all sports on CoachTube. So there are people that are starting to grab hold of this. I think it's really hard to practice the disciplined pursuit of less. It's much easier to practice the undisciplined pursuit of more. And that's what the whole world does. And I think it goes back to wanting to be getting approval for outworking other people. And that disciplined pursuit of less is what you and I sound like we're on the same page of. And I love the word disciplined because otherwise people think it's soft. And you and I know that the only way you benefit from the type of work you're describing is by doing it at a performance level. You are not going in with survival training. You're not tired, cranky, beat up. No, you need to go in with a healthy body in order to perform in your workout. And when you are too tired to perform, you go home. You don't go another 2 hours and ruin the next day because of that. And you are just so right that everywhere, it's almost like trying to change people's religion when you come and say, you need to do a lot less. I tell the Saquon Barkley story, and I'll probably tell the rest of my life, but Saquon called me. He had a bad game yesterday, but he called me a month before he signed with the Eagles. And he said, I like your stuff. What should I add to my workouts? And I said, you're not going to like my answer. He goes, well, I want to hear it. And I said, well, you need to take a bunch of stuff out of your workouts. You need to do less. He goes, like, maybe do like 500s instead of 20. And I said, no, no hundreds. And he paused for a long time and says, Coach, I feel like I've been brainwashed. And I said, we all have. We've all been brainwashed. So to make a long story short, I get him set up with Brian Kula, and Brian Kula teaches him how to do I call it an atomic workout, small but powerful. You're going to do it twice a week, even during the season, most importantly during the season. And after a game that he hit like 22 miles an hour and gained 250 yards last year, I sent him a 3-word text. I said, younger, leaner, faster. And he said, yes, sir. One word, yes, sir.
Yeah.
And you know, when he called me, he said that he was tired of getting hurt and felt like he lost a step. He was 26. You know, a lot of running backs are washed up by then. And I thought he looked like a college kid last year.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, I think everybody's seen too many Rocky movies. And, yes. You know, they it's the grind mentality. And it is just, now, don't get me wrong. I mean, there's times with some of the teams that I'm contracted with, they need a character adjustment. And so sometimes those workouts have to come into play. And I will be absolutely honest with kids, like, look, there is no athletic benefit to doing this. Basically, your coach is upset with you and he wants me to, you know, character adjustment. So, but for the most part, yeah, it's more about the, you know, quality over quantity. And I think, you know, one thing you said earlier was metrics. So when you know, it's competition level with everything. And I think a lot of times if you put metrics on it, then you have a reason to shut it down. If you're running 30 yard flies or whatever they may be, and we're declining, then why are we continuing? Obviously, fatigue is setting in. And so I just talk about that with a lot of coaches, to use those type of resources rather than trying to eyeball everything. Because trying to eyeball somebody when they're running at 100% of their speed is it's difficult to do. We all think we can do it. But, you know, you use video, use metrics, and take the time to break those things down with your athletes. Tell me, I'm a big strength guy. I look at strength training depending on off season, in season. You know, in season, if I'm looking at a sprinter, I want maximum recruitment with the least amount of fatigue possible. So I like low intensity, I like rack squats for sprinters. I, you know, mixing it with plyos and just maximizing that explosive power.
Founded in 2004, BBS Radio TV stands as a trailblazer in remotely engineered live radio broadcasts over the internet. We ignited the new media revolution, offering a powerful platform for vital voices and alternative perspectives that mainstream media often silences. Our live broadcast stream on over 200 of the world's largest internet broadcast stations, with on-demand syndication across all major social networks. Visionary entrepreneurs Douglas and Donald Newsom have crafted over 100,000 radio and web TV episodes for more than 1,000 satisfied clients. Experience the pinnacle of web radio and TV engineering. Compare our unbeatable prices, exceptional services, and comprehensive offerings with any other professional provider, and you'll see why we're unparalleled in the industry. Call us at 1-800-338-4393. At Benson Sports Training, we build athletes of every age, every level, and every goal. Whether you're chasing your first medal, a college scholarship, or just a healthier you. Our expert online coaching programs will help you perform at your best. Train smarter, move better, achieve more. Enter 15OFF in the discount code at checkout for 15% off your first month. Visit BensonSportsTraining.com for more information. Where champions are built every day. BensonSportsTraining.com.
BBS Radio TV. If it's not mainstream, it's on BBS Radio TV. A place for answers.
How does the weight room factor into your training?
A lot of people think I'm anti-weight room. Maybe because I don't have enough tattoos or big enough arms or I don't know. But I don't talk much about the weight room because that's not where I work. Right. You know, it makes a difference. But I think I've been important to the coaching of the meatheads of the world. You know, the weight room guys. I'd say mm-hmm. that as a term of endearment. I have a couple really general things. Strength is good. Period. Strength is good. Everybody needs a lift. Everybody. Especially people as they approach 70 like me. If you're not lifting, you're dying. And right. Even if you're lifting, you're still dying, but you prolong it a little bit. But strength is just so important. Nothing in the weight room has a direct correlation to speed. And that really hurts people's feelings. But I say that I cannot come in and watch a kid lift and say, you're going to be on my 4x1 team. But I can watch a kid dunk. Right? Right? There are things that are KPIs of speed. And there's nothing in the weight room that is. Now, does that mean they shouldn't lift? No. But I think, to me, that gives you license to keep it variable in the weight room. Variety is really good. I think that since sprinting is one-legged, that should tell us something about our direction in the weight room. One of the things I say is never let the weight room interfere with the sport in season. And never let the weight room interfere with sprinting. The weight room is supplemental. And that hurts feelings too, especially if you own a weight room, because you want to say that everything good is going to happen here. And I believe that anybody that's lifting without sprinting is probably going to look like Tarzan and play like Jane, the old saying. Football coaches have always said, man, if that kid could play as good as he lifts or as good as he looks, we would. Well, the problem is he doesn't move well. And so what I have found is no matter how hard you lift in the weight room, you may lift to a point that it's almost a negative. If you are sprinting along with it, I think it counterbalances a lot of that stuff. And the last thing I'll say, David Weck is a controversial figure, but he's become a friend of mine. And I call him the Nikola Tesla of speed training because he's half crazy, but he has some really good ideas. And the spine moves when you sprint. Whether or not it's truly a spinal engine or it's just a mobile spine, that the spine must, we call it coil and extend, where one side coils, the other side extends. We do that when we run. When we sprint, if you break it down, that coiling makes the head go over the foot, and then the other side coils and the head goes over the other foot. Not only that, but there is a twist of the shoulders, slight, it's not exaggerated, a slight twist of the shoulder and a slight twist of the hips in the opposite direction.
Mm-hmm.
You are rotating and counter-rotating, which creates torque. And those things, if you can picture somebody running with a braced spine, they are going to run very robotically. Whereas the fastest guys, the guy that sets the record at the NFL Combine, probably has long dreads, and the dreads are flopping back and forth, left and right, because he does not have a braced spine. And I think that if we're not careful, and if we lift as the only athletic thing, only athletic training we do, the spine becomes more and more braced. And so sprinting will help keep the spine right, and then also rotational stuff in a weight room. And as you know, many weightlifters that are power lifter based or bodybuilder based don't do much rotational stuff. And I think it's all those things are necessary.
Yeah. And I take it one step further, the combination of lifting speed and then throwing plyometrics. And the term of, or the meaning of plyometrics has been destroyed over the last 10 years by CrossFit and all these other organizations that call everything a plyometric. But I'm talking about a true stretch reflex working on ground contact time, full extension. So I totally agree with that. You know, I'm one of those guys with weight rooms. My philosophy on the weight room is it's foundational. You know, that's, you know, everybody's got to be strong. Strong is never a weakness. Weakness is never strong. But I, you know, one of my athletes that plays in the NFL, he says it best, that's your body armor. That's what keeps you healthy. It's your injury prevention. And I've seen a lot of guys that, you know, twitchy athletes that are incredibly just naturally gifted, but they've never been in a weight room. And as their career progresses, they start to see injuries because they put so much force on their joints and they've just never prepared their body for that. You know, totally agree with you that, you know, you're not going to walk in a weight room and see somebody bench pressing 300 pounds and know they're going to be a sprinter. You know, the one thing that I would probably say is if I walk into a weight room and see a guy cleaning 300 pounds, there's probably a pretty good chance he's going to be fast, because the correlation between cleans, most of my 300 pound guys are 40 inch vertical guys, and most of my 40 inch vertical guys can move and create force. You know, that would be the one thing in the weight room that I would say, you know, could probably be an indicator of an athlete that could be fast or has the potential to be fast. Just to kind of wrap up, you know, something I've heard lately out of the Altus camp, you know, Stu always kind of has some different thoughts there. And he's, you know, he came out and talked about how the A series maybe isn't quite as important as you know, the emphasis we put on it over the years, and that we need to be focused more on extension and pressure into the ground. What's your opinion there?
Are you talking like speed drills and things
like
that?
Yeah. A-skips, yeah. All that.
Yeah, I have done the speed drills that we do, you know, like in our atomic speed workout. People can look it up. Doesn't cost anything on YouTube. And my atomic speed workout's a 15-minute workout where you do 60 seconds of work. You do 10 speed drills in 10 minutes. My business partner, Chris Korfist, who's world famous, he'll say stuff like, we don't do speed drills. Speed drills don't get you any faster. Blah, 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 blah. And you know, I respect that. And he's half right. The problem I have with that is if you are taking 14-year-olds, when are you coaching them? If we do our speed drill segment serves as our warm-up, even though I don't like calling it a warm-up because it tells the kids they can talk and be sloppy. No, we are doing speed drills. We're doing it each one at an 11 on the scale of 10. We're trying to do every single thing better than we've ever done it. And it does prepare us to sprint. Keeps us from being injured when we sprint. But the main thing is that this is when I can reinforce the cues that are important to sprinters, like big in the front. Well, every time you do an A-skip, you're getting big in the front. Big in the front just means you're picking your foot up. Your knee's out in front of the body and you're picking your foot up. That's the difference between running and sprinting. Running is a shuffling back and forth. Sprinting is getting big in the front. And by the way, when you get big in the front, you got to get short in the back. You're never long in the back. So that's one of my things, big in the front, short in the back. You get tall. I've heard people argue about, no, you need to, you know, like lead with the heart. Your chest needs to be, the experts want to get in this pissing contest with each other to decide who's the better expert. And I do not play those games because I say I'm not an expert. I'm not an expert, but I am simple and efficient, and my message can be conveyed to kids. My way of cooking can win for you. So we get tall when we sprint at max velocity. And then the third thing I say is the hands have to pass the hips. Too many people run with a permanent, I call it T-Rex arms. Basically, their elbow stays bent. A sprinter has full range of motion. There's a stretch reflex in the front shoulder that only happens if your hand goes past your hips. Carl Lewis called it elbow to the sky. It's the same thing, but you have got to be full in the arms. And there's little things I can adjust, but those are the big three. Like when we're running with our arms, I want that hand to be as low as possible as it crosses. You know, the arm gets straighter when it crosses that hip. And also, when the hand comes up, it comes pretty close to the center line. But when it goes back, it widens out to take advantage of your lats. You know, it's just the way the body works. And so if you're teaching somebody to run with a stiff spine and some weird, you know, like sawing motion of the arms, they're going to run like Rich Eisen in a suit in the 40-yard dash. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes. Well, that is awesome. We need to wrap things up. I sincerely appreciate you coming on. I literally was smiling the entire time because it's so good to talk to somebody that shares the same philosophy in training and in speed. So I really appreciate your time. Please tell us again where people can find your training. Is it seminars or however you refer to them?
The Track Football Consortium is really big. I have tons of stuff on YouTube that's free. CoachTube, you pay for it, but I really appreciate when people buy stuff. And then I'm on all the platforms, and I just love to speak.
Okay. Well, I'm certainly going to make sure that every track coach that I know gets a copy of this when we put it out. Again, I really appreciate you coming on, and I hope that we'll be able to do this sometime again. This was a lot of fun.
I love talking to people that I don't have to convince otherwise.
Yeah, I'm pretty easy sell on that one.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for joining us today on Building the Athlete. Awesome, awesome time spent with Tony Holler. Definitely an innovator out there in the world of speed development. Just, I was grinning ear to ear that entire session just because everything that he talks about is what I use with my athletes. So if you're looking at, you know, getting into that world of speed development, definitely contact Tony with all of his different locations that he gave. Again, my company, BensonSportsTraining.com. You can definitely come there for help as well. Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube under Benson Sports Training. And join us next week where our guest will be the author of The Confident Mind, Dr. Nathan Zinser. Great book that I have shared with dozens and dozens of my athletes. Talks about mental approach in sports and in life, and I'm excited for that one. So stay tuned next week. Thanks for being here.